In our breakout and best-selling book, Looking for Angels, A Guide to Understanding and Connecting with Angels, Dr. Scott Guerin and I share how you can communicate with angels, understand signs from the universe and these celestial beings, feel at peace knowing you are always connected to Source, and much more. Get your copy today at lookingforangelsbook.com, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or your local bookstore. And now you can even get the audio version narrated by me and Scott through Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. You are listening to A Psychic Story, a podcast that shares behind-the-scenes insights of people who lead supernatural lives among the ordinary. And I'm your host, Nicole Bigley. Join me every Wednesday as I dispel the myths behind magic and lore. Welcome to A Psychic Story. Mysticism. Hi, psychic listeners. Our guest for this episode of A Psychic Story technically needs no introduction, given the millions and millions who have around the world have read his books, but I'll still give you one because it is such an honor that we have him on the podcast. He is a modern-day spiritual messenger whose words continue to touch the world in profound ways. With an early interest in religion and a deeply felt connection to spirituality, he spent the majority of his life searching for spiritual meaning before experiencing his now famous work, Conversations with God. He has written 39 books on spirituality and its practical application in everyday life, with his latest book being God Talk. This is the story of Neil Donald Walsh. Welcome to A Psychic Story, Neil. We are honored to have you.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here with you, and I appreciate the opportunity. How may I serve you?
Well, that is a wonderful question. So here on A Psychic Story, we spend the majority of the episode talking about each guest's stories and experiences as far as how they got into spirituality. And so I know that's a very big question, but I'd love for you to talk to the many who are listening and haven't read your books or seen your movie, how you got to where you are today. I saw in one interview that you said you were born, and that was the first start, but you've had many, many experiences. So I'll hand it over to you and would love for you to start wherever you feel led.
Well, Nicole, really, I led a pretty normal life, not much different from anyone else's. Born, raised, I had a wonderful childhood, and I had a wonderful family of origin. No complaints there, nothing but praise and humility and gratitude for the wonderful family life that I had as a child. But then I grew into my adult years, and like all adults, I ran into the things we all run into, a difficulty at the beginning, at least, in finding a way to make a living and, you know, create relationships that worked and, you know, keep my health going in the right direction and not losing any of that. And so it was, you know, meeting the regular challenges of life. But then somewhere along the way, I was around 48, 47 years old, 49, somewhere in there, my life began falling apart completely. And then, Nicole, I had a 10-day period when I was given the triple whammy. My relationship with my wife at the time ended. It wasn't a bitter ending. You know, we weren't angry with each other. We were just agreeing that we just were not making it as well as we would like to. And so we agreed amicably to just go our separate ways. And that was, you know, sad for me because we had children together. But it was, you know, it was what life was bringing me in. So I was, you know, ready to deal with that. But then 5 days later, I was downsized by my corporation, the corporation that hired me. And I was, not because I didn't do a good job. In fact, my boss told me, you're one of the last people I'd really want to lose, because you're really doing a wonderful job for us, but you were the last person in. So you're the first person out because you have no seniority. So, you know, when we're downsizing, we have to let the newest person go. So now within a 5-day period, I've lost my relationship and lost my job. But wait, the universe wasn't done with me yet. I'm in the car driving to an interview for another job, which I was certain I was going to get because I had all the requirements. Plus, my old boss had given me a sterling letter of recommendation, simply explaining that I had been let go because of a corporate decision, but that my performance was exemplary. So I know I'm going to get this new job. So I thought, okay, I'll be out of work for a couple of weeks, but no big deal. I can make that happen, right? No, I never got.
Oh, no.
I never got to the appointment. I never got to the interview because an older gentleman turned his car in front of me, made a left turn right into my lane when I was driving down the road. And it wasn't a fender bender. It was, he totaled my car and almost totaled me. I could have died in the accident. I wound up with a severely broken neck. Not a hairline fracture, Nicole, but a 3/4 inch avulsion fracture of the 7th cervical vertebrae posteriorly. In other words, a break in my neck large enough to put a pencil through. Now, the doctor said to me when I came out of the anesthesia, you know, Mr. Walsh, you're a living miracle because 98% of the people who suffer that kind of a break in their neck die instantly. I mean, on the spot because of spinal cord complications. But he said, and those who do not die on the spot, that maybe 2% of the people who survive that accident are at least inevitably paralyzed from the neck down. You have suffered neither consequence. You're a miracle. Then he leaned over the table. Of course, I was on a table in the emergency room. And he looks at me and he says, so what are you going to do with the rest of your life? Really put the challenge to me to let me know that I had been given an incredible gift, not received by many people. But things went from there from bad to worse because I couldn't get a job anywhere. I was wearing what they call a Philadelphia collar. It's a therapeutic device that holds your head up. Mm-hmm. And the doctor said, Neil, you will not take this device off of your neck for any reason until we tell you to, because it's the only thing holding up your head. Your neck is broken. So think of a bowling ball being held on the head of a pin. You've got nothing supporting your head. So you will not take this off for any reason. I don't care if you're taking a shower. I don't care if you're sleeping. I don't care if you're making love. You will not take this off of your neck for any reason. Do you understand? I said, I got it. I had to wear that collar for a year and a half, the better part of a year and a half. Nobody would hire me. Nicole, I was going to job interview after job interview. And finally, the 7th interviewer was honest with me. He said, Mr. Walsh, we'd hire you in a minute if you weren't wearing that therapeutic device around your neck. But we're very clear that you've suffered some kind of an injury and that you're in rehab. One false move while you're on the job for us and we're paying your medical bills for the next 5 years. We can't hire you. Come back when you know you've healed this whole problem, whatever's going on with your neck, and we'd hire you in a minute. So now I'm out of work and nobody will hire me. I can't find a job anywhere. The landlord of the apartment that I had rented asked me to leave. I mean, that's putting it mildly. He actually evicted me. Because I couldn't pay the rent because I ran out of my savings. Now, Nicole, I'm living, you guessed it, on the street. I was living the great human nightmare. I'm a street person, sleeping on the sidewalk, laying down on the concrete, trying to find a piece of soft ground somewhere in a park where I could hide out. But the police wouldn't come along and say, all right, move along. Having to go from person to person on the sidewalk with my hand out. Please, anything you could find. Anything helps. I remember one man saying, you know, all I have is, you know, a couple of coins in my pocket right now as it happens. I only have, you know, I said, sir, please, if you just gave me a quarter, if I got a quarter from everybody I asked today, I might be able to eat by 4 o'clock this afternoon, maybe even get a hamburger. Please, whatever you've got. But that wasn't the ultimate loss of human dignity because I realized when you're living on the street, you have no place to use the bathroom. I had to sneak into restaurants, Nicole, and try to slip into the men's room without anyone seeing me. You couldn't do that very often because the manager of the restaurant would see, you know, somebody who looked the way I looked, my hair down to the middle of my back. I was wearing some wrinkled clothes. I didn't smell that good. I mean, I was obviously a street person. And you know, one manager after the other would say, no, not here. We don't want you panhandling, you know, the guests. Please don't let me call the police. Finally, I had to beg one guy at a McDonald's. I said, please, sir, please, just need to use the bathroom. He said, I don't want you panhandling. I said, I'm not going to talk. I won't talk to anybody. I promise. He said, okay, make a deal with you. In and out. I said, yes, sir. In and out. Yes, sir. Jumped into the bathroom and I left. And he let me because he knew I was trustworthy, that I was not going to bother anybody in the restaurant. So he would let me come in there, and I finally had a place that I could use the toilet. That's my long story. And then I got a weekend job. I couldn't get a full-time job anywhere, but I managed to get a weekend job as a weekend fill-in a fill-in employee and just enough money to afford a little, not even an apartment, just kind of a studio, a one-room place on top of somebody's garage and in somebody's backyard. They had turned the top of the garage into a little one-room studio. But at least I was out of the weather. And they had actually installed a bathroom. Oh my God, there was plumbing. I could actually take a shower. Oh my God, what a luxury. And so there I lived for a while, still looking for a full-time job someplace, but at least out of the weather. And then I woke up one morning at 4:30 in the morning, calling out in my mind to God, okay, what does it take to make life work? What have I done? Am I such a horrible person that I'm supposed to be having this life of continuing struggle, endless difficulties and challenges every day of my life? What is it that I don't understand here? And I found a yellow legal pad on the coffee table. I was making a list of things I wanted to get for myself. So I began writing a very angry letter to God. I wasn't trying to write a book. It never occurred to me. It never occurred to me that anybody else would ever even see this handwritten glob of notes. Nicole, I was just trying to get my feelings out, just trying to get my anxiety out. So I'm writing a letter to God. It's 4:30 in the morning. Dear God, what does it take to make life work? And I remember writing, tell me the rules. I'll play. I will play this game. Just tell me the rules. How does it go? That's when I heard a voice in my head. Neil, do you really want answers to your questions, or are you just venting? I said, you think? Yeah, I am venting. But if you've got answers, I'd sure as hell like to know
what they
are.
You'll take them. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Did you ever have a voice like that before? Was this the very first time?
No. I mean, we've all heard the voice of our own thoughts.
The inner dialogue.
Mm-hmm. We've all had that, but I never heard anything quite like this. And then the voice said, Neil, you are sure as hell about a lot of things, but wouldn't it be nice to be sure as heaven? And I'm thinking, okay, what's that supposed to be? And God said, I'll answer your questions. Ask away. So I just wrote down, questions, the kind of questions anyone would ask about life. And I began receiving answers. So I wrote down the answers. And before I knew it, I was involved in a dialogue, question, answer, question, answer, question, answer. The answers were astonishing me because they were not answers I'd ever read or heard about any place before. In fact, not only had I not heard those answers before, the answers I was being given contradicted all the answers I had heard before about life, just about everything. It was a direct contradiction of what I'd been taught as a child and as a young person about life itself, to say nothing about God. So I'm getting these answers, and then somewhere in the dialogue, I'm told directly, you will make of this one day a book, and it will be accessed by many people. Now I'm thinking, now I got you. If you really are God talking to me, then this is going to happen, but it's very unlikely. It's not. It's just my imagination. Right. I'm making this all up in my head. Nobody's going to publish a book. No reputable publisher is going to put a book out by a guy who claims to be talking to God. I mean, I can just see the editor, saying, hold the presses, stop everything. Mm-hmm. We got a guy here who's talking to God.
Yep, let's publish it. Let's get it out there.
Mm-hmm. Not going to happen. Nobody's going to do it. So I sent it to a couple of publishers, three or four, not 20 or 30, but I think it was three or four, five publishers that I sent it to. And my phone rang 2.5 or 3 weeks later. And the guy says, we'd like to publish your book. I said, you're kidding me. You're kidding me. You're going to publish this? He said, yeah, it's a great work of fiction and it's going to sell lots of copies. And I said, whoa, wait a minute. This is not a work of fiction. And the guy says, wait, are you trying to tell me this actually happened to you? This is not a story of a guy, who thinks he's having a conversation with God. It's a great literary device, but you think it's true? I said, I don't think it's true. I know it's true. He said, well, okay, we'll put it out as a nonfiction book, but as a nonfiction book, it's going to be a big pushback to many people. Nobody's going to really believe that an average human being is having a two-way conversation with God. Come on. Well, we'll be lucky if we sell 500. And he was right. It was right on. It didn't sell 500 copies. It sold 5 million.
Wow.
Not bragging, just saying. You asked what happened. And what I learned from that is, when God tells me something, I probably want to listen. And that's true for all of us, because the next thing I was told is, because of course, I asked somewhere in the conversation, very early in the dialogue that I was having on paper, I asked, why me? Why would you choose me to have this conversation? And God said, oh, Neil, sweetheart, it's not just you. I talk to everyone all the time. The question is not, to whom do I talk? The question is, who's listening? So I realized then that we are all having conversations with God. We're simply calling it something else because we don't want to be marginalized or ridiculed or laughed at or even made wrong for daring to say out loud, yeah, God told me this morning, God said to me yesterday. So we call them something else. We call our conversations with God, you know, serendipity, an epiphany.
Intuition.
Women's intuition, you know, a psychic hit. Whatever we can get away with so that people, you know, can at least, okay, fair enough, that could probably happen because nobody thinks that a conversation with God can actually happen. So we call them something else. But that's my story and I'm sticking to it.
Well, it's been serving you well so far. And you said that you heard the voice in your head. It was more the thought, but it was a different kind of thought, than not that inner dialogue. So, you know, and you said that beautifully as well. It sometimes can be we call it intuition or a psychic hit or something else. Can you go into a little bit more detail about that voice and how also other ways you may have those connections or that communication with God?
Sure. The voice really sounded like, as I said earlier, like the voice of my own thoughts. You know, I call it a voiceless voice. When you hear yourself talking to yourself, so to speak. And so that's, the voice didn't have any characteristic in particular. It didn't sound like an older man or a young woman or a child or any of that. It just sounded like a voiceless voice, the sound of my own thoughts. But I have come to understand and come to experience that God speaks to us in 100 different ways across thousands of different moments in 500 different lifetimes, not just words, feelings, visions that come to us, you know, the sounds, the lyrics of the next song you hear on the radio. You're driving down the road and there's the words on the next billboard as you turn the corner, and the exact 8-word little slogan that answers the question you've been asking yourself for the previous 2 months, or the chance utterance of a friend you happen to run into on the sidewalk. You just happen to meet that person, or an overheard conversation in a coffee shop. So God talks to us in 1,000 ways across 500 lifetimes. And we merely need to pay attention to what God is telling us, which is what I wrote in reading my latest book, which came after The God Solution. The newest book is called God Talk. And that book came out just in November of 2023. You know, it happened because I wasn't trying to write a book. I really wasn't. I got a call. Most of the other books, you know, that authors write and that I wrote, I had an idea and I wrote a book that I tried to see if I could get it published, and publishers would say yes or no. But in this case, my phone rang and it was a publisher saying, we would like you to publish a book, to write a book for us, talking about how people can have the experience you've had. I said, wow, this is the first time I've ever been invited by a publisher to write a book. And the publisher said, well, you know, we think it would be a very valuable book to have. So we did. I wrote it. I wrote it very quickly because it came through to me like in 4 or 5 weeks. I think 5 or 6 weeks. And the book was done. It was called God Talk. And it talks about how we can all have our own conversation with God.
So how is, I guess I would love to get into that in a moment, but what has been your experience that you had, the separation, the divorce, the car accident, you know, experiencing the loss of the job? It was just like one hit after the next. And then that seemed to crack you open and to be able to be more, I don't want to say ready, but to have that conversation with God. Is that what you've come to understand and experience, I guess, so that then there's that ongoing conversation, like once that door is open, it's able to just flow?
Well, that's how it was with me, Nicole. That's not how it has to be with everybody. We don't have to all reach the bottom of the barrel. You know, I'm kind of a stubborn guy. You have to hit me over the head with a 2x4. So I got what I call the triple whammy. But the average person doesn't have to go anywhere nearer that level of experience. We simply have to take a little six-step process that I've developed, that I realized that I was experiencing, that helps us to have our own conversation with God.
And so I would love for you to also share, what is God? And also, how is our connection to God? Because you've written about how we're not separate. We're all connected to God and each other. So explain a little bit about that.
Well, I've been asked, what is God, by only 1,000 people. And I give the same answer naturally to everyone, which is that to try to define God is to try to accomplish the impossible. It's like how you define the indefinable. God is limitless. God is indefinable. I can't say what God is, except broadly speaking, that God is an energy, an energetic flow, what I call the essential essence. And I would define God in human terms as pure love. Pure love, meaning the kind of love that needs, requires, demands, expects, hopes for, nothing in return. We can't even love the person on the pillow next to us that way, much less imagine a God who loves us that way. Religion insists on teaching us that God does not love us with pure love, that needs and demands nothing in return. Oh, no, no. God does love us for sure, but God does demand something in return. You must follow the dictates of a particular religion, which wouldn't be so bad, Nicole, if it was only one set of dictates. But there happened to be, on this day of our life, 4,233 religions currently being practiced on the face of the earth. Oh, and each religion tells us, by the way, you better pick our religion. You better pick the right religion.
It's the one.
If you pick the wrong religion, you're going to hell anyway. Even if you pick the wrong religion with every good intention, sorry, you weren't the right religion. You weren't Catholic, or you weren't Muslim, or you weren't Jewish, or you weren't whatever you think you need to be, according to what your religion teaches you that you need to be. So here we are trying to follow the dictates of all the world's religions so we can avoid going to hell. And that's, you know, a sad situation, a sad place for us to be. But when you ask, what is God? God is the essential essence of pure love that needs, requires, expects, demands nothing, and therefore punishes us for nothing, has no need to punish us. So I was told there is no such place as hell. Hell does not exist. It's simply an invention by humanity to try to scare us into doing what those religions tell us is the right thing to do. For instance, some religions are actually taught, when I was a child, I learned, I was born and raised in the Catholic faith. I mean, I'm not a Catholic basher. In fact, I want to say I'm very grateful to my Catholic religion and to my family for raising me as a child in the Catholic Church, because if nothing else, the Catholic Church taught me that there was such a thing as God. It made God a very real reality in my life. But it's also taught me a lot of things about God that I'm not sure that I've continued to accept as truth in my life. As an example, God taught me that to have sex outside of marriage and for reasons other than simply procreation was totally not okay. Thank goodness I didn't believe that, or I'd be in big trouble. Because if I have to go to hell for every time I've had sex for reasons other than procreation or outside of marriage, I'm in big trouble.
Yeah, I remember when I was little, I think I was probably around 5 or 6. I remember starting to ask those questions, like, do I believe in God? Is there God? And what I would always go back to is the way I felt. You probably don't know my story, but for listeners who have been on this podcast for a long time, I remember being on the other side and that connection that we were all connected. We weren't separate. Yes, we had an individual experience, essentially.
Many children do. I'm sure you know that many children have that exact memory. Yes.
Yeah, now, but then I didn't. And so I remember saying this to my parents, and they're like, okay, that's great, sweetheart, whatever. Like, we believe you because I believed it, that sort of thing. But I would ask the question, and I would always go back to that feeling, like what you were talking about, that feeling of unconditional love. And it was that I used to move forward in my life with. You know, my mom was Catholic, or she was raised Catholic. We weren't very strict Catholic household. My father was in, or his family was in the Baptist church or Methodist. I never can remember because we were never, religion was a part, but it wasn't part of our lives. And so anyway, just looking back on that experience and how I was able to keep that memory of that experience and allow that to guide me, helped me then moving forward with knowing that there is this, when we come here, this idea of separation. And you use this example so beautifully about our hands and how God explained that we, you know, the hands and the fingers. So would you share that with listeners who might not be familiar with it? Because I think that's such a great way of giving people that understanding of our connection to that oneness or source.
Yes, well, I was, you know, trying to understand what God was saying to me when she told me, Neil, we are all one. You are an individuation of divinity. We are all one. And I said, no, we're not. I mean, we're separate from each other. I'm not one with Nicole. I mean, she's Nicole and I'm Neil. I'm not one with everybody else on the planet. And I'm certainly not one with God. I don't understand. How can I be one and unless I totally lose my individuality? And God said, sweetheart, hold up your hand. So I did. I held my hand up and she said, are the fingers of your hand separate from your hand? I said, no, they're connected to my hand. They're part of my hand. God said, but are they not all individual? Do they not all look different and serve entirely different functions? In that sense, the eights have their own experience, but they're all part of the hand, right? I said, well, that would be true. God said, so notice that you are all fingers on the hand of God. And then she gave me another metaphor that I could really attach myself to as well. He said, if you want a different way of thinking about it, have you ever been on an ocean liner and, you know, or on a cruise ship and seeing the waves on the ocean? I said, yeah, I've seen ocean waves. God said, great. So what I want you to know is that when the wave arises from the ocean, it's not separate from the ocean. It's not something other than the ocean. It's simply the ocean in an individual arising. And when that wonderful expression, powerful and beautiful and glorious as it is complete, the wave recedes back into the ocean whence it came. That is a description of your relationship with God. Wow, I got it. We are waves on the ocean of divinity. And so God said to me, now that you understand, Neil, go out there and make waves.
And that's even better because the way that Spirit has shown me is they'll show me a drop in the ocean and then the ocean. Like we're part of the ocean. We're also separate, but we're connected. Not the separate part, but how that all flows. But the wave just expresses and shows the amount of energy and the force that we can have in all that we do.
Yes, precisely.
So back in 2011, you wrote about basically what's going on in the world now with the storm before the calm. That was a play on words. And I think it's so appropriate nowadays for what we're going through. And it also ties in rather to that individuality and everything else that we just talked about. Can you share a little bit about that and why it's so important?
Well, yeah, we are experiencing the storm before the calm. People all, you know, we've all heard the saying, the calm before the storm, but this is the exact opposite. Obviously, it's been stormy weather here for quite a while now on this planet and getting more stormy every day. You look around us and we're going through what could be perhaps one of the most critical passages in our evolution as a species that we've ever gone through. I mean, you know what, Nicole? Not just what's going on right now. We've had armed conflict on this planet, to use one simple example. We've had armed conflict on this planet for all but 5% of recorded history. And if armed conflict wasn't enough, we have starvation. Do you realize that 653 children die on this planet of starvation every week? No, I'm sorry. Every hour, 653 children die on this planet of starvation. While we throw away enough food in the planets of Los Angeles and Tokyo to feed an entire village of third world countries for a week. What is the matter with our species that we don't even see what we're doing to ourselves? We can't even find simple ways of solving problems. Must we really kill thousands of people over a borderline dispute? We can't even agree on where your country ends and my country begins. And our disagreement is so severe, we're going to kill 30,000 people to solve the problem? What kind of a species does that? Oh, I see. A very primitive species that's experiencing the storm before the calm. But I do believe that necessity is the mother of invention, and that we are now approaching a time when things are going to become so severe, and not just in those areas, but economic areas, and even the climate crisis. Just forget about everything else, just what's going on in our climate. So this is the storm before the calm. And we are now facing a situation where we either do something to change things or we may not have a long-term future. And so that's what the point is made in the storm before the calm, that is that we now get to decide, who are we in relationship to all these exterior experiences that I've just described? Who are we and who do we choose to be? And is it possible, just possible, that we have within our power the ability to decide who we are in such a way that we change these exterior experiences? And I believe the answer is yes. And that's described in The Storm Before the Calm, and even more specifically in Conversations with God, Book 4, which lists 16 differences between highly evolved beings and people who are walking around in a state of being asleep, sleepwalking, not knowing who they really are, much less what we could be in order to change the prevailing experience.
And the solution to that is, I don't want to say returning to self because I won't put words in your mouth, but looking at the fact that we are an extension and we're part of God and that source in one another and that unconditional love.
Yes, precisely. The solution to that is embracing our own, dare I say it, embracing our own divinity, that we are indeed individuations of God. Or as even religion tells us, many religions tell us, made in the image and likeness of God. But here's an incredible difference, an incredibly important difference between being made in the image and likeness of God as God really is, and as many religions tell us that God is. As I mentioned before, many religions tell us that God is loving, but also judgmental, condemning, and punishing. Now, if we think that's the image that we are made in the image and likeness of, then we're going to be judgmental, condemning, and punishing of each other. And we'll actually use that as our justification.
Do this, not do this, be this, don't be this. It just gets out of hand.
Yeah, and that's why we have wars, because not everybody agrees with our list of demands. And so we wind up killing each other to make the point and to get our way. But if we decide that we have been wrong from the beginning about who and what God is, what if God really is pure love that demands, requires, commands, requests nothing from us in return for the love that God bestows upon us? What if we decide that's true? Then we would change the course of human history, because we would lose our rationale, our justification for acting the way we have been acting with each other. And what could cause us to change our behaviors with each other is a simple statement, a simple four-word statement that opens Book 1 of Conversations with God. Now, we are all. There's only one of us. What you do for you, you do for me. What you fail to do for you, you fail to do for me. And what you do for another, you do to yourself. Notice the world that you've created. But if you really understood that we are all one, then you would stop doing to another what you don't want to have done to you, which, of course, is the golden rule that nobody is obeying.
But don't you think that sometimes when you take that paradigm or you take that concept away from someone, then they're like, what am I? Who am I? Not that individual part of it, but that bigger piece of God. I think there, I won't say an existential crisis, but we do tend to, which is a good thing, I think, to go back to, all right, for me at least, it was when I lost a job, when I had some other experiences, and I had to kind of go back and reevaluate what was important and a priority to me, you know? And what my spirit team or universe and source said was, who are you? Like, who are you as a soul? Who are you as a person? And then what I went into was, I want to be in service. I want to better understand my purpose. But they're like, that is you doing something. Like, who are you? What is that extension of not an individual, but yourself? And then I went back to, well, I want to be loving and compassionate and caring and all those things. So it's not an easy answer for people. If you're listening, it's about taking those steps, I guess, and thinking through, what does all of this mean to you? And then how do you apply it?
It's not an easy answer, unless it is the challenge is that it's such an easy answer that it's almost too good to be true.
Right. Yes. I think that's what I was trying to get at. You so eloquently said it. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I said that to God. I said, what are you trying to say? We are all one with each other and with you. It's too good to be true. That can't be the way it really is. God, it's too good to be true, what you're telling me. And God said to me, sweetheart, if God can't be too good to be true, who hell can? Who in hell can? Oh, that's right. Somebody in hell, which doesn't exist. You made it all up. So you've not only made up a place called hell, you've made up the stuff that you think is too good to be true. But what I'm telling you is the truth. We are all one. And when you treat everyone whose life you touch in that way, your whole life will change. I said, wow, what are you telling me? What are you trying to say? Can you just put it into one sentence? God said, sure. Here's the sentence you're looking for. Your life is not about you, comma. It's about everyone whose life you touch and the way in which you touch it. And when I understood that, suddenly a universal truth became clear to me. There's only one of us in the room. So obviously what I do to or for you, or failed to do to or for you, impacts me, which is why the world is the way it is today. And it's also why the world would change tomorrow if we simply decided to embrace the golden rule, do unto others as you would have it done unto you. Because it is being done unto you, because there's only one of us in the room. Neil, wake up.
I love that. I love that. And so I want to get to, in our remaining time, God Talk. Again, your latest book. How do people talk to God? Walk us through the book and, you know, some of the examples and steps that you give people.
Well, the steps that I really wound up realizing that I had been taking. And mind you, when I first sat down, I didn't say, I'm going to take 6 steps and that'll get me to God. But when I look back on my experiences through the years, I realized that I had, in fact, you know, without thinking about it in those terms, had in fact taken 6 steps. The first step was possibility. We have to realize, we have to accept that it's possible. And number one, that a thing called God exists. And number two, that God would talk directly to us. That it's possible for us to, in fact, have a two-way conversation with God. Not just that we have a one-way conversation that we call prayer, but a two-way conversation. The second step is worthiness. We have to embrace our own worthiness. Because, you know what's interesting? Most of humanity agrees that, you know, that God has talked to human beings. We know that. I mean, God talks to the Pope, presumably, you know, the chief ulama, the head rabbi, you know, the holy people among us. We all agree that God talked to Moses. Religion teaches us that God talked to, and that God is, in fact, a being called Jesus. Some people believe that. And you know, other Buddha or whatever, you know. So clearly God talks to human beings, even women. Oh my God, even people without a penis. God actually talks to women as well? Neil, what are you telling me? So we have to believe that we are worthy to be spoken to by God. Then we take step 3, willingness. We have to be willing to violate or step against the cultural story, because the cultural story of humanity is, come on. God doesn't talk directly to you, much less through you. Who do you think you are anyway? So we have to be willing to step into what we know ahead of time is going to be a tremendous negative reaction to the idea that we are talking to God and God is talking to and through us. Because many religions say that to even say such a thing is blasphemy.
And then you go to hell, which doesn't exist.
It's apostasy. So that's step 3. We have to be willing nonetheless to experience that God is talking directly to us. Step 4 is wakefulness. Once we're willing and consider ourselves worthy and decide that it is possible that it could happen, we have to stay awake and not miss the times that it is happening in the many ways we've discussed. Not just words in our mind, but visions, as we said, feelings, which are the language of the soul, many ways in which God is speaking to us, many ways in which the universe, if you please, is conversing, sending messages to us. As I mentioned earlier, the chance utterance of a friend on the street, the lyrics of the next song we hear on the radio, many, many, many ways. So stay awake, stay awake. Step number 5 is acceptance. Once we begin to, because of our wakefulness, hear these messages and feel these messages, we have to be able to accept them for what they actually are and not say, nah, it's just my imagination. That's just a coincidence. It was just serendipity. It's not really God. So we have to accept that a larger part of life that I call God is speaking directly to us. And then finally, step number 6, discernment. To be able to tell the difference between messages from the divine and information that's coming to us from all sorts of other places in the cosmos. You know, the internet, somebody who has a bright idea about something, or it's a sign. It's a sign. You know, the example that I like to use is that, you know, you reach into your pocket to grab your car keys and a $10 bill falls out of your pocket as you're reaching for your keys. It's a sign. We're supposed to throw all of our paper money on the street. No, no, it's not a sign. It was an accident. So discernment is step number 6, to know the difference between what I call conversations with God and that which is not, that which is simply maybe an accident, just something that happened. So those are the 6 steps to having a conversation with God that I discussed. And of course, I outlined them in much greater detail in the book titled God Talk, which only came out a few weeks ago.
There's also a lot of practicality when it comes to it as far as walking people through. If you are asleep and you're not thinking about the possibilities, that's disservice to yourself, but thinking about there are all these possibilities and steps you can take. That worthiness is huge. I think people maybe at the heart of what you're getting at is, oh, I can't do this, or I don't have intuition, or why God would talk to me, or whatever else. That's getting to that next level or that next step and that next phase and how that looks for you and so on and so forth. And then, yes, I think the other thing is being able to understand that discernment as far as what is a sign, what's that communication, but always going back to that truth of what does it mean to you? You know, if it's important and it stands out, then that's what it means to you. And being able to eventually figure it out from there as you're going through those steps, hopefully it all starts to become more and more crystal clear for everybody.
CWG made it very clear to me, Neil. Nothing has any meaning save the meaning you give it.
Nothing has any meaning save the meaning you give it.
Write that on your bathroom mirror.
Or a post-it note. Put it in your car, wherever.
Get a magic marker, a felt tip pen, and write on your bathroom mirror, nothing has any meaning save the meaning I give it. Changed my whole life. Then I got to decide event by event, moment by moment, experience by experience, what it meant to me and who I want to be in response to the event. I mean, Bill had it perfectly. He said it simply, to be or not to be. That is the question. Whether it is nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune or to rise up against a sea of troubles and by opposing to end them, to die, to sleep perchance to dream. Aye, there's the rub, for in that sleep of death.
From your perspective, what is the purpose of life?
To complete the agenda of the soul, which is the purpose of life for every sentient being in the cosmos, not even for all human beings, but for every sentient being in the universe. The purpose of life is to complete the agenda of the soul and move toward completion of that agenda in each of our consecutive lifetimes. The agenda being to demonstrate, fulfill, express, and experience who we truly are.
And what is your purpose?
It is the same for every human being and every sentient being in the cosmos. My purpose is to demonstrate the truth of who I am. That is an individuation of divinity. So it's the same for all of us.
And I just wanted to ask that because a lot of people will say, this is my purpose, or what is my purpose?
Well, see, people think their purpose is to do something.
Right.
My purpose is to write a book, or to appear in a movie, or to play first base for the New York Yankees, or my purpose is to be a plumber in Pittsburgh.
Or get married, or have kids, or whatever it is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Purpose has nothing to do with what I call doing this. Our purpose is to be an aspect of divinity in every golden moment of now, and whatever aspect of divinity that we choose to demonstrate, to announce and declare, to express and fulfill who we really are. When we do that, we bless the world, we bless our lives, and we have found a way to demonstrate that we are living in the kingdom of God. So don't go around asking, what are we to eat? What are we to drink? Wherewithal will we clothe ourselves? Seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all these things will be added unto you. I could, of course, be wrong about all of that. I don't think so.
You don't think so? Well, I would agree with you there. Okay, and then finally, best advice you have ever received, whether that's from God, yourself, or someone else.
Your life is not about you. Your life is about all those whose lives you touch and the way in which you touch it. As I mentioned before, it's the best advice I ever received. Get off it, Neil. Your life is not about you. It's about everyone whose life you touch and how you touch it. But when you think that way, watch your life change for the better forever. In which case, your life turns out to be about you. Because we are all one. There's nobody else in the room.
Appreciate that. And thank you so much. I'm honored again to have you on, to be able to speak with you, to be able to ask these questions. Again, you have over, 40 books now. There's also the movie of your life, which I'll be sure to include in the show notes. But for people that want to get in touch with you or to get your books or anything else, where would you like them to go?
CWGConnect.com. That's how to stay connected with the messages of Conversations with God. CWGConnect.com.
Thank you so much again, Neil, for being on. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Nicole. Lovely to be here with you.
Thank you for listening to A Psychic Story. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode and join the conversation on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. All episodes are free on your favorite podcast player or at apsychicstory.com. Have a question? Is there a topic you'd like to hear more about or have a suggestion for a future guest? Send an email to contact@apsychicstory.com or leave a voicemail message at 1-800-880-1881. We'd love to hear from you and you may even be featured on a future episode. If you're interested in booking a session with me, you can do that directly on the website. And if you want to hear even more content hosted by yours truly, check out my other show, Supernatural Matters. Reminder that you are automatically entered to win either a free 20-minute intuitive or energy healing session with me if you leave 5 stars along with a positive review. Currently, reviews can be left on Apple, Stitcher, Podchaser, or CastBox podcast players. Don't forget to email contact@apsychicstory.com when you do, because it allows me to get in touch with you if your name is pulled in the drawing. Your name stays in until you win.